Welcome to Onk Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onk Live On Air is a podcast from Onk Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onk Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Allison C. Rosenthal, DO, a hematologist, internist, and oncologist in the Department of Hematology at Mayo Clinic in Phoenix, Arizona, about the care of adolescent and young adult patients with Hodgkin lymphoma. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Rosenthal discussed the discrepancies between pediatric and adult oncologists that result in differing treatment approaches for Hodgkin lymphoma across patients aged 15 to 39 years, common concerns these patients have as they navigate their diagnosis and treatment alongside other life changes such as pursuing higher education, becoming financially independent, or starting families, and how adolescent and young adult patients are particularly affected by a lack of accessible, affordable health care and awareness of clinical trials. Thank you so much, Dr. Rosenthal, for taking the time to speak with us today at Onk Live On Air about the care of adolescents and young adults with Hodgkin lymphoma. So to start off, how does this disease typically present in younger patients, and are there factors that can complicate diagnosis here?
Hodgkin lymphoma is a type of lymphoma that tends to affect the center of the chest. It likes to set up shop kind of with tumors in the middle of the chest. And so one of the most common presenting symptoms is persistent cough or shortness of breath. Otherwise, patients can develop lymph nodes that they can see or feel maybe in the neck area, under the arms or in the groin. Hodgkin's will sometimes have an association with what we call B symptoms. So fevers for no good reason, drenching night sweats where you have to change your shirt or change your sheets, or weight loss that doesn't make any sense. And one of the unique things with Hodgkin's is sometimes people can be pretty itchy without having a rash. And so I always ask people when they come in with a new diagnosis of Hodgkin's if they're itchy. And a lot of times I get, oh my gosh, yes, I thought I was losing my mind, and nothing really kind of takes away the itch except for taking care of the Hodgkin's. So that's a little bit of a unique presentation. As far as delays for diagnosis, I've been talking about this now for a couple of years, and I suspect we'll see an impact of it in the coming years. But there's really been a delay in care for a lot of young adult patients in the time of COVID, unfortunately, because of similar presenting signs and symptoms of COVID with cough and sometimes fever. And so I've had a lot of patients come in with more advanced disease than I had been seeing in the past, primarily due to the fact that for a while there, no one came to the hospital except for if they had COVID, right? And because many of our young adult patients don't have primary care providers, and so their only access to health care would be either through urgent care or an ER. And so, unfortunately, I think that might impact outcomes in the coming years. But people have been coming in with kind of worse disease than we would expect.
How would you typically treat adolescent and young adult patients with Hodgkin lymphoma?
That is the crux of the matter, and the reason why this is probably even an important topic. So technically, the age range of adolescent and young adults is 15 to 39. I'm an adult oncologist, and so I see this through the lens of taking care of adult patients, which is really 18 and up. But depending on where these patients present, and probably the most at-risk group for getting different input is like people, you know, age 18 to 21, let's say, or 17 to 21 maybe, because they have the chance to land either in a pediatric clinic or in an adult clinic. And currently today, the treatment that would be offered for the same stage and presentation of Hodgkin's in a pediatric clinic versus an adult clinic is different. There's studies going on now that might change that, where we all end up on the same page. But right now, you would get different recommendations. And so in the adult practice, primarily, we have treated early stage patients with chemo alone or chemo and radiation, and advanced stage patients with chemotherapy. There has been an update in the last couple of years about what we give to advanced stage patients. But in the pediatric group, those patients are grouped as far as low, intermediate, or high risk, and then that determines what treatment is offered. So what we've all done, just as a community in taking care of Hodgkin's patients over the last several years, is try to find better ways to treat patients, maintain really high cure rates, because we're lucky to have those as is, and then decrease the incidence of things that we do to people in the long term. So the modifications in treatment and the studies that are being done are really looking at keeping the same or improving current outcomes, and then reducing the risk of the potential fallout of having had treatment in the first place. at least in advanced stage Hodgkin's patients, there's finally a collaborative, cooperative group of studies that are happening, including patients in all, like, of that entire age range is incorporated. Because primarily what has happened is there are studies for peds and there are studies for adults. And we haven't had studies in the past that enrolled the whole age range, and now we do. So we don't have results of those yet, but it's those type of studies that might finally inform us as to what the optimal treatment regimen is for AYA Hodgkin's patients, because right now you get disparate answers from the pediatric and the adult doctors.
And so then just on the topic of these discrepancies between the pediatric oncologist and adult oncologist treatment methods, is there anything else that you want to say regarding how these differences might be addressed and mitigated going forward?
A lot of the nuances are adolescent young adult specific nuances that may not be Hodgkin specific nuances. And so we know that there's a lot of barriers to care that our AYA patients face. One of the things that has been a real challenge in advancing treatment options for this group, be it in Hodgkin's or anything else, is that very few AYA patients actually enroll in clinical trials. And the main reason we think that happens is because most of them are cared for in the community practice where they may just not have access to trials. There may also be some perceptions about what trials are for and what they mean that impede our ability to enroll a lot of these patients. But the main things really we worry about in the AYA group are things associated with getting them to a center who can manage their care and has the expertise and the personnel there that understand that AYA patients have different issues and different complications of therapy than younger or older patients might with the same diagnosis. And one of those big things is the financial implications of treatment. Historically, this group has been underinsured or uninsured more so than any other age group. And so that's another kind of barrier to access to good care. That is one of the primary things that really impacts our ability to offer them the best care we have.
What are some additional common medical and psychosocial concerns that young adults with Hodgkin lymphoma may have, such as fertility preservation, minimizing long-term effects if they're in school or starting their early careers, and then how do these factor into their treatment?
These are the really important things to have to keep in mind. Those of us who are interested in taking care of AYA patients know that the big picture is really important, right? Yes, we want to treat their lymphoma and we want them to be well in the long term, but these other factors are things that cannot be ignored. It's true that if you think about what stage of life people are in their early 20s, 30s, late 30s, there's some pretty important milestones that people hope to achieve in those years, right? So either moving out from living with your parents, becoming independent, starting college, starting grad school, starting a family, those are all things that have to be put on hold or at least modified as goals if somebody gets diagnosed with a lymphoma in the midst of all that happening. And so we have to keep in mind what that does to somebody's emotional place, their relationships, their psychosocial, concerns, just that from a developmental perspective, may or may not have coping skills to deal with this kind of stuff that early in life. The better we can do to kind of build programs around young adult patients and make sure that those support networks are in place, be it peer support networks or psychosocial support through counseling or social work or health psychologists. And a lot of centers are kind of building that into their programs. From the medical side, you mentioned infertility or fertility concerns, and that obviously is a really big deal and something that, like, we get a chance to talk to patients about that early. But if you miss an opportunity, you might have missed an opportunity for good to offer that to patients. So, in the context of Hodgkin lymphoma, we're fortunate that many of our frontline therapies, which will cure most of our patients, don't have a big risk of causing long-term permanent infertility. Now, that risk goes up as people get older towards the upper end of that group, but there's still some risk, and we don't have a good predictor in advance to know if you're going to be in the 10% that has a problem or not, let's say. And so the practice should be and has been, we should offer fertility preservation procedures to anyone who's eligible and interested. The financial part of that can sometimes be a barrier. But even if you counsel patients and say, look, high likelihood that you're not going to have a problem, you can naturally have a family after you finish treatment. What we also can't predict is which patients might have a recurrence or might have resistance to initial therapy. And then we're in a little bit of a scrambled place where it's a little bit harder to get that done in a timely manner. And it might be difficult to do immediately following initial therapy. So I try to convince all of my patients who think that they want to do it or not sure if they're going to have a family and they can afford to do so to just take that step ahead of time. So we have that as an assurance and it's not something to worry about down the line.
Going forward, what unmet needs still remain in Hodgkin lymphoma, specifically for these younger patients with regards to treatment or survivorship care?
The treatment-related unmet needs are things we're looking at now. So how do we incorporate the more recently approved therapies earlier on in the treatment of Hodgkin's lymphoma? How do we identify who our high-risk patients are going to be that should have optimized care or augmented care from the get-go? What do we do with patients who have recurrent lymphoma in order to optimize their outcomes? How do we counsel patients on what long-term risks they may be susceptible to as a result of their therapy? Those risks are different if you received chemo alone versus chemo and radiation. And because of these financial concerns, the insurance-related concerns, and for many patients who are in the lower half of that age group, they're on their parents' insurance when they get diagnosed and go through treatment, but then fall off when they turn 26. And there isn't a good system in place to be able to preemptively counsel patients about the importance of follow-up care, what their options are for transitioning onto an independent insurance support networks. Like there are a number of different organizations that support young adults with cancer across the United States and internationally, which is better than nothing. You know, but going through cancer as a young adult patient is a really isolating experience and a life-changing experience. And so I think more and better programs around supporting people through treatment and after treatment, because we know that, you know, going through treatment is challenging enough, but then how do you get back to functioning and how do you deal with kind of the trauma that you just experienced that was not your fault, that you didn't ask for, that somehow altered the path of your life? And I think, in my opinion anyways, like we really do a poor job and could do a much better job of supporting people after treatment as well as we do in treatment. And that includes survivorship concerns, right? Age-appropriate cancer screening, what needs to be done sooner, what things should I be looking out for? How do we get these patients primary care doctors so if somebody's keeping an eye on their other health-related concerns? Because the reality is most of these people are going to have some long-term impact of their therapy. Hopefully nothing dangerous, but like important that they follow up for sure.
Is there any specific ongoing research in this area that you'd like to highlight?
There's a highly anticipated SWOG-1826 study, which is a phase three randomized study comparing what's now the standard of care for advanced stage Hodgkin's, which is brentuximab with AVD, to nivolumab with AVD. Nivolumab being another kind of novel therapy for Hodgkin's that we've used in the relapse refractory setting, but its role in the upfront setting is still kind of being explored. And this is one of those studies that has enrolled patients of the full spectrum of AYA patients. So I believe it's 12 and up that we're eligible for that study. And it may answer, at least for us, what's the optimal treatment for advanced stage Hodgkin's patients in that age group, and maybe practice changing for us, just as the Echelon study was when it established, you know, BV-AVD as the standard of care for advanced stage Hodgkin's patients that are adults anyways. We're a little bit behind in figuring out where that goes in the pediatric space because brentuximab has only recently been approved in the pediatric space where we've been using it in adult patients for a really long time. And so I think it won't be the last study that gets done in that full age group, but it would be a very informative study and I think would help us decide from that point forward what kind of studies do we need to design to answer the remaining questions we have.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.